Welcome to the Transform Your Mind Radio Hour and Podcast, a show about transformation, mindset transformation. This is Life Coach Marnie Young, and in my book, Out of the Snares, A Story of Hope and Encouragement, I share my journey of being born in poverty in Guyana to have an abundance in America. And I did it by changing my mindset. Let's go do it. Each week, I bring you guests or one-on-one coaching sessions to help you change your mindset and transform your life. Welcome back to the Transform Your Mind, Transform Your Life radio, podcast, and television show. I'm your host, Life Coach Marnie Young, and I'm so excited today to be talking to Rob Kenner, New York Times bestselling author of The Marathon Don't Stop, The Life and Times of Nipsey Hussle. I will tell you that I'm so pleased that I can share this information with you because as Rob is going to tell us, Nipsey was more than a rapper. This was a young man that was instrumental in a lot of things, building up his community and giving back. So Rob is going to expand on our knowledge of both hip hop and Nipsey's life and legacy. But I want to admit that I did not know of Nipsey Hussle until he was murdered. And then the whole world was talking about it. And then I was introduced to him because my generation is not necessarily a rap or a hip hop kind of generation. You know, I'm with the R&B soul generation. So, Rob, on the other hand, is intimately connected with hip hop and its culture. And we will discuss hip hop as well as explore the life and times of Nipsey. So welcome again, Rob.
Thank you for having me, Myrna. It's great to be on your show.
Yes, yes. Great to have you too. All right. Well, let me give our listeners and those watching on TV a short bio of Rob. Rob Kenner is one of the most prolific and influential voices in hip hop publishing. A founding editor of Vibe, Kenner joined the startup team of Quincy Jones' groundbreaking Hip Hop Monthly in 1992. During a 19-year run at Vibe, he edited and wrote cover and feature stories on iconic cultural figures ranging from Tupac Shakur to Barack Obama, as well as writing the acclaimed column Boomshots. Kenner's writing has appeared in Complex, Genius, Mass Appeal, Pigeons and Planes, Ego Trip, Poetry Magazine, The New York Times, and Billboard. He's also produced and directed documentary shorts on the likes of De La Soul, Nas, and Post Malone. As an author at Vibe Books, Kenner worked on the New York Times bestseller Tupac Shakur and contributed to the Vibe history of hip hop. He went on to co-author VX, 10 Years of Vibe Photography, and produced the book Unbelievable, a biography of Notorious B.I.G. by Chio Hodari Coker, which was optioned for the motion picture Notorious. Wow. You've done some important work, Rob.
Thanks for through it. I appreciate you highlighting it.
Well, I had to. I mean, you are definitely a special guest, and I definitely want to, uplift you and tell our audience that they're listening now to a world-renowned journalist and author. You've been on the New York best-selling author for several different times. Now, I was reading your press releases. I understand that you met Nipsey Hussle about 10 years ago at Vibe. And so I want to start off by asking you, what impressed you most about the man back then? Of course, he wasn't, I don't think he was called Nipsey Hussle back then, right? He had his original name.
He actually had started rapping as okay. Nipsey Hussle by that point. But it was even a bit longer than 10 years ago. That was 2009. And Nipsey had just released one of his first major mixtapes, a project called Bullets Ain't Got No Name. And he was very excited to come up to the office of Vibe Magazine and present it to the staff. As I learned later in the process of researching my book, The Marathon Don't Stop, he had been submitting his demo and photo to the magazine for some time and hoping to be featured in our next section, which is a platform for new artists. People like Jay-Z and Biggie and Mary J. Blige got their first page in Vibe in the next section. That was, Nipsey's goal to be featured in that section. Honestly, where he was in his career at that moment, he was not really on our radar yet. You know, he was an unsigned artist when he was first sending those demos in. But like every goal he ever set for himself in life, he set a very high goal. And although he did not achieve his goal right away, he persisted and kept at it and did not give up. And by God, he made it into the office of Vibe by 2009 and presented his mixtape to the staff. So I was just impressed by his charisma, his energy, his personal magnetism, if I could call it that. You know, he just had something about him that everyone who was in the conference room that day remembers that young man who walked in with his braids immaculately done and his, you know, his outfit on point, his gold chain was shining, and he was very proud to be presenting his music. And when he pressed play, it was powerful stuff. You know, we had worked on the first cover story for Snoop Dogg back in 1993. And so I personally had a strong sense of deja vu. Nipsey was coming from Los Angeles and giving that really hard West Coast sound. And actually, one of the tracks on the tape, he was rapping over a famous Dr. Dre beat, the song Gin and Juice that Snoop was, well known for. So hearing someone go over that beat, you have to come correct. You know, you can't just mess around on that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But Nipsey really brought it. And, that was very impressive to me. So after he played all of his music, I took him aside and I said, you know, keep doing what you're doing. We're going to give you all the strength that we can. And in fact, he did get his one page write up in Vibe shortly before the magazine folded or ceased print publication anyway. It became a digital publication.
Right, online, right? Mm-hmm.
So he got his page in the magazine and, you know, would go on to greater things. But I just kept watching him. I was listening out for what he was doing because I was so impressed by that initial impression. And over time, everything he did was special. He was just doing things differently and changing the game in terms of his business strategy. And as I would learn later, his commitment to his community and to all of the people that were helping him build his movement. So yeah, that was the first impression. And it definitely, you know, stuck with me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I listened to some of his music before, I talked to you and I was very impressed by his words as well as the music of itself was pretty good. I actually listened to Motivate and Hustle.
Yeah.
And it had 63 million views. So, I mean, you know, people love him and people love what he was trying to do. But in your book, you didn't necessarily write the book because of because of the artist, right? You wrote it because of the man and what he represented. So can you tell us why you wrote the book? And I know that a couple of his tapes were, one was The Marathon, and then the second one was The Marathon Don't Stop. So what does that really mean? And why did you choose it as the title of your book?
Sure, sure. So just to back up, the mixtape titles were The Marathon and The Marathon Continues. And okay. Marathon Continues is kind of a motto for his fans, especially after his tragic passing, just kind of a rallying cry to make sure that all of the things that Nipsey stands for continue, all of the principles that he advocated in his music and in his interviews and in his daily life and his work, which have to do with self-empowerment, economic independence, owning your own intellectual property, owning, you know, real estate, investing, financial literacy, and then also just, you know, supporting people who support you and really, you know, a spirit of kind of collective upliftment. And I think, you know, that is such an important principle in times like these and, you know, certainly during Nipsey's life as well. But the reason that I wrote the book and why I called it The Marathon Don't Stop is that I believe that Nipsey Hussle is one of the most important and misunderstood artists in the history of hip hop. And more than that, as you mentioned, he is a businessman, an entrepreneur, and a leader and an activist. He really identified strongly with civil rights leaders. In the latest song, which was released, you know, after his passing, it's a track called What It Feels Like, which is featuring Jay-Z and Nipsey Hussle on the same track. It was part of the soundtrack to the film Judas and the Black Messiah, if you caught that. There was an album inspired by that movie, and that was kind of like one of the key featured tracks off there. Nipsey refers to himself as Young Malcolm. And, you know, he wore a Malcolm X pendant, which his brother had made custom for himself and then let Nipsey keep when his brother was going away to prison for a little while. But then Nipsey wore it proudly, you know, throughout many performances and videos. And I think there was a reason behind that. He saw himself as much more than an entertainer. He was someone committed to the upliftment and, you know, the full respect of his community. And I think that is one of the reasons why this book was so important. You know, you are not the only person who's told me that you were unaware of what he was doing until, you know, the Staples Center Memorial, where 1,000 people were all on their feet, you know, mourning him and celebrating his life. President Obama wrote him a letter of tribute for that ceremony. Stevie Wonder sang at the funeral or at the memorial. Snoop Dogg eulogized him. And of course, his beloved Lauren London delivered a very moving tribute as well. So, you know, a lot of people just weren't aware because Nipsey was not interested really in being the most famous rapper. He wasn't chasing celebrity status at all. He was mostly interested in building a movement starting in his own family and then his community. And, you know, he had a family-owned business, which was called All Money and No Money Out Records. He and his brother also had a successful clothing store called the Marathon Clothing, which they built right in the same shopping plaza where he used to sell his mixtapes hand to hand, right there on Slauson and Crenshaw. He always talks about that intersection in his music. And
yeah, I saw he's got a title called Crenshaw. Great.
Right. Crenshaw, that was a really groundbreaking mixtape. The Crenshaw Project, I would say for the rap industry, that was the moment that if you weren't paying attention to Nipsey Hussle, everybody woke up at that moment, because he had the ambitious idea of selling his mixtape for $100 a copy for a physical CD. This was at a time when you could not get people to pay anything for music. They were downloading everything for free.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, the internet had completely changed the business model. And he talked about that in our interview, you know, that, you know, his career was just taking off when Napster and MP3s and that whole technological wave hit the music industry, and it completely shook everyone from a business standpoint. So he compared it to like an airplane taking off, and you have to fix the plane in midair just as it's about to, you know,
lift off from the. That's a really good analogy. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. So,
that's what he had to do. And, you know, he was a very smart young man. He was really a genius, honestly. He was able to build computers from parts just by reading articles and magazines. He was very astute about social networks and digital technology. He was early on Napster, which was the site where college kids were trading MP3s and downloading them for free. Mm-hmm. So he understood that he had to give his music away for free. And that was fine with him. He was building an audience, and he would also, you know, sell merchandise. He would do live shows, and he had a strategy where he was going to go state by state. And he had a plan to make, you know, a specific goal of income based on earning a specific number of fans in each state. And he had it all figured out of how much he could earn a show.
A great businessman.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He wrote all his goals down. He had whiteboards in every office and bookshelves filled with books. Just a very organized and focused person. So anyway, the Crenshaw tape, by that point, he had put out a few free mixtapes and built up quite a loyal fan base. The Crenshaw actually came after the Marathon tape, and Marathon Continues. So those tapes expressed his vision of the marathon, which was a long-term view, just viewing life as marathon.
Okay, got it.
You know, and you know, you don't give up just because you're behind in the first lap. You know, you have
to.
You know, I say in the book that the marathon is not a team sport. You know, other people can be cheering for you. You can practice together. But nobody else can run.
Only you are running with the baton. Right. Okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right.
So, you know, Nipsey understood that. And he used that concept of the marathon really to encourage himself when he was down, when there were, you know, setbacks in his path. And there were quite a few, which we get into in the book in detail. But, you know, he withstood tremendous pressure from, you know, a neighborhood that was extremely volatile. There was a very hostile relationship between the police and the members of the community. There was a strong gang culture, which Nipsey eventually became involved in. And, you know, his life was filled with challenges. And, you know, he was someone that had unlimited potential, but huge obstacles, seemingly unsurmountable obstacles.
And his community, even though that's probably why he was trying to build it, because the community where he lived in had all those obstacles, and he wanted more. And that's basically what his goal was, and what drove him, because he wanted to build it back up. And it's unfortunate that, you know, we're not writing this autobiography, you know, when he's completed all those, you know what I mean? Somebody took his life in mid-sentence, you know? So,
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the hardest parts about all this, is when you think about what might have been.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as you mentioned, you know, you never really heard of him until that moment.
Right.
I think that there was an explosion of interest in his work and the work he was carrying on. Of course, that won't fill the gap in the heart, you know, the hole in the heart of his family and his loved ones. But, you know, in terms of people paying attention to his work and what he stood for and the principles that he lived by, I think that that is why the book is called The Marathon Don't Stop, because
right.
You know, Nipsey Hussle's movement, it has not stopped. He has been a steady presence in all the conversations about race in America. His face has been on murals all around the world. His music was streamed millions of times on Election Day 2020. He had a very important song which he and YG, a friend of his from another neighborhood in Los Angeles, made a song called FDT. And I'm not sure if you listened to that one, but the initials are a rebuke of President Donald Trump. You can probably figure out what the F
is. I think I heard that one. Yeah. I didn't really hear it, but I saw it when I was going through the titles, right?
So, you know, Nipsey and YG recognized that was running on a very divisive platform that, you know, although Trump was actually friends with a lot of rappers during his days in New York as kind of a real estate tycoon, I think his name was just equated with success. And so people like to hang around with him and party and whatever. But when he got into public life, it became clear that he was trying to demonize Mexican Americans, that he was throwing Black students out of his rallies, that he was endorsed by the Ku Klux Klan. And therefore, you know, there was a threat to, you know, the way of life that we had gotten used to under 8 years of Barack Obama, certainly. You know, when I was at Vibe was the first national magazine to endorse Barack Obama for president. And, you know, hip hop, I believe, helped to mobilize the vote, which brought, you know, President Obama into office. But after 8 years of Obama, Donald Trump was presenting kind of a backlash and, you know, definitely playing on racial divisions. And I think YG and Nipsey Hussle were very important in that they recognized that and they organized a response from the hip hop, you know, culture, which was to make that song FDT. And although it didn't prevent Donald Trump from being elected, it did stream, as I mentioned, millions of times on Election Day 2020. And I believe it helped mobilize the vote in what turned out to be a pretty close election in some states. So, you know, we have him to thank for that. I think Nipsey deserves credit and YG as well for recognizing the power of hip hop to speak to the moment in terms of social and political issues. Now we were talking about the Crenshaw tape, and I just want to mention when he decided to put out that tape and sell it for $100 for a physical CD, his concept was mocked. He was called crazy. You know, the music was available for free download anyway. And for some reason, you know, he believed that his fans would spend that kind of money just to support him. And he firmly believed it, but people in the blog sphere and even some radio stations in LA, you know, were making fun of the idea. Well, as it turned out, they sold $100,000 worth of CDs the first night. $10,000 were wired by Jay-Z to get 100 copies of the CD. And it just proved, you know, at that moment that Nipsey Hussle was ahead of his time. He understood how to market music and how to build a relationship with his audience. One of his brilliant ideas with this CD was to bundle it with tickets to a live performance, which would only be for the core fans. That was his, one of his key principles was not to try to be known to everybody, but just to find out the people who really loved him and who really supported what he was about and serve them. And so they supported him very strongly. And this idea of bundling your CD with tickets to a future concert for, you know, VIP fans has now been borrowed and emulated by the rest of the music industry. Artists like Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift now use that same strategy. They call it a bundle. And it's an idea that was originated by Nipsey Hussle. So, you know, he's just one of these people who was ahead of his time and doing things that no one had ever thought to do. And it's important that he be credited for that, and also that the ideas that he advocated, you know, continue.
That's amazing. Thank you for that. Wow. So you also make a comparison between Nipsey and Tupac Shakur. Can you, I know they were both, you know, cut down in the, when they were supposed to go on to do remarkable things. It's just absolutely amazing. But then because they were so good and because they were almost martyrs, we still talk about them over and over again to get is their legacy continues. So what is the similarities between those two?
Well, I wasn't the first one to compare Nipsey to Tupac. He actually called himself Tupac of my generation. And that was
I think I saw that.
Mm-hmm. That was on the album that you were listening to, Victory Lap, which was his major label debut. He actually only released one album on a major label, and that was 2018's Victory Lap. Soon after that album was released, he came to New York to do a press run, and that's when I did my last, you know, in my really biggest in-depth interview with him. And of course I asked him about that line in the song, because that's a big statement. I said, you're calling yourself the Tupac of your generation. What do you mean by that? Tupac means so many things to different people. And he said, well, I know it's a big statement, but, to me, Tupac was a Trojan horse for the streets. He had so much more going on inside of him than his thug life image would suggest. And he was actually a very intelligent and sensitive person with a lot of different talents and qualities that he didn't necessarily present at all times.
He also probably had the same kind of background, because I understand that Tupac's mother was part of the Black Panther. And so, you know, they're both had this innate, maybe, you know, going towards the Black movement or the Black power mm-hmm. movement, or, you know, enabling Black people to be better than what they're getting. Right.
I absolutely agree. Fannie Shakur, Tupac's mother, passed away 5 years ago yesterday. We're taping this on Ohio, 5th of May.
Wow.
She passed away on the 4th of May, 5 years ago. And she was indeed a member of the Black Panther Party, and remained dedicated to issues of just saving Black lives. Before Black Lives Matter was a slogan, before Twitter mm-hmm. was even invented, she was committed to, the preservation of Black lives and the improvement of racial disparities in this country. I mean, there's, you know, that's a big part of my book, actually, The Marathon Don't Stop. You know, I try to place Nipsey in the context of American history and LA history and hip hop history, because, he was also the son of an African freedom fighter. His father, Dawit Askedom, had been a part of a struggle in his native country of Eritrea in East Africa, which has had a long-running dispute with Ethiopia, which formerly Eritrea was part of Ethiopia. And the people of the two countries actually seem very similar culturally and in terms of, you know, everything, their appearance, their lifestyle in many ways. But, due to colonial forces and divisions that go back for decades, there's been a long and tragic civil war there. So Dawit Askedom was a teenager when he left Africa and moved to Los Angeles seeking asylum from that struggle. And his son always proudly referred to him as an African freedom fighter. So both Nipsey and Pac had that kind of struggle, in their blood, if you will. But I think for Nipsey, what he was relating to was this idea that what he told me was in our culture, street culture, being intelligent is sometimes looked on as a form of weakness. And so you don't want to show too much of your intelligence because you may put people off or have them think you're soft or something like that. So, you know, in order to involve everybody in whatever movement you're trying to build, you don't necessarily show off every bit of your intelligence. And right. Nipsey said that he could identify with that. And so I thought that was interesting that that was the parallel that he saw with Tupac. He certainly wasn't thinking about being, you know, having his life cut short at an early age.
No, of course not. And, right. Who thinks and, that? Right. No,
exactly. And Nipsey actually, you know, lived longer than Tupac. Tupac died at
because he was 33, right? Tupac was what, in his early 20s?
He was 25 when he
25, right? Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's an interview where Tupac says, "I may not change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the mind of the person who does." And I believe that one of the minds that Tupac sparked was young Hermes Ascadon, who would go on to be known as Nipsey Hussle. So
That's really sad.
Parallels there.
Now, it's really interesting. We're just talking about all these rappers or artists that were cut short early, but you also have a book about the Notorious B.I.G., which is another person that was destined to do great things, but again, he was cut down by violence. We were talking about Malcolm X. We're talking about Nipsey. We're talking about Tupac. We're talking about Notorious B.I.G. You know, why is it that, you know, we can't live a full life and, you know, complete our, you know, our purpose on this earth without somebody taking a gun and shooting us down?
Well, that's a very powerful question that you ask, and there's a lot of answers to it, but no one has found a solution. I think, you know, we can talk about it all day, but, you know, I was speaking with someone in Chicago. Tone Capone is a radio DJ in WGCI in Chicago recently, and, you know, Chicago is going through a terrible, terrible year of violence, and they have for several years, but this year is particularly bad, and there's lots of reasons. You know, the schools have been shut down due to COVID, and, you know, the gang culture has been, you know, deep rooted in that city for a long time. And there's just too many guns everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things that I said in the interview was, you know, when you're speaking to your audience in Chicago, you know, maybe ask them, like, what would Nipsey Hussle do before you go pull that trigger? You know, think about like someone who came from the same kind of struggle that you may be going through, who made a decision to put the gangbanging down and elevate himself through business and through art and through, you know, collective empowerment. And, you know, these are the issues that this country has been struggling with for a long time. You know, why are there so many guns in the streets? Why is gun lust the American national pastime?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have so much more homicide by firearms than any other country in the world. And, you know, we defend this right to bear arms and the Constitution, and, you know, the gun lobby has so much power. Every time there's a mass shooting, people try to organize and, you know, just limit access to firearms a little bit, not ban them completely, but just not make it like driving through and ordering a hammer.
My opinion is that they don't value their lives. They don't value anyone else's lives. You know, your life doesn't seem to, you know, mean anything in that culture.
Well, I have a friend who lives in London, grew up in London. And, you know, she tells me that every time you go to the pub in London, it's not uncommon for a fist fight to break out, and people will, you know, go on and, you know, beat the heck out of each other. And then the next day they're all at the pub again drinking. And it's different when you have firearms all over the place, you know, temporary.
And now that I think about it, was Nipsey murdered for the same thing, a stupid argument, and somebody went and got a gun and shot him?
Well, that is officially what, you know, we have, that's what we know. We don't know why that person was there that day. We don't know why they had the gun. We don't know why they came in just when Nipsey was there at that moment. There's a lot of things that will probably never be answered about.
Okay.
And I very carefully do not try to solve the murder, honestly, in the book. You know, that was never the focus of the book. This is a book about a triumph rather than a tragedy.
Okay.
I want to focus on the message and the movement and the marathon rather than this atrocity that took place. But yeah, it is an issue that has to be addressed. And, you know, there is a kind of nihilism and certainly a lack of respect for life. You know, Biggie Smalls, as you mentioned, is another example of a life that, you know, could have blossomed into so much more than, you know, the brief time he was on earth, the brilliant work he was doing. You know, we're going to talk about these guys forever. So it is absolutely outrageous that so many geniuses have been snuffed out. And then other people who were just living their lives and being part of their family and, you know, making their way.
It's a terrible legacy. But I want to talk about hip hop. Because like I mentioned, I had to do some research before this interview to understand what it really is. So I know that you're intimately connected with this and, you know, rapping is maybe probably a little different, but hip hop, but why has hip hop become this lifestyle and culture of the young generation? It's not even a race thing, because you know it's not only, you know, to the African Americans, you know, it encompasses everybody. Even again, Justin Bieber can be called a hip hop artist and all the others, right?
I think that's debatable about Justin Bieber, but I think that there is we're actually coming up on the 50th anniversary of what is considered the birth of hip hop, which was, say there was a party in the Bronx in 1973, where DJ Kool Herc and his sister Cindy Campbell threw a back to school party. Their parents were there. I just recently was part of an amazing conversation with Kool Herc and Cindy and two of my fellow hip hop journalists, Jeff Chang and Davey D. And we were just talking about the birth of hip hop in New York. So it's an interesting question that you bring up. You know, in this conversation, which was, you know, just a few days ago, the Kool Herc and his sister were both emphasizing, you know, our parents were at the party. And if you, you know, came to start any nonsense, you know, you were going to be asked to leave. You were going to, you know, have to act right to be at their hip hop party. So, you know, hip hop was not ever about negative forces or anything like that. It was, but to the contrary, it was a way to escape the struggles of, you know, life in the Bronx at a time when Bronx was a real, you know, the Bronx was burning, literally. It was a, you know, it was an urban wasteland. And hip hop grew and evolved into a multi-billion dollar industry. It affects every aspect of pop culture, from fashion to language to, you know, politics, you know, marketing, business, everything now is influenced by hip hop. And, you know, I believe that, you know, you mentioned I was at Vibe Magazine. My OG in this whole music journalism thing is Quincy Jones, who founded Vibe Magazine. Yeah,
good old Quincy, forgot him, right? But I'm thinking of Quincy as R&B and Motown, you know? So, yes.
Well, if you were to ask Quincy, he would say, and I've heard him say many times, that, you know, as a jazz artist, he understood the bebop generation as the coolest thing that had hit music ever at that moment. And when he saw hip hop artists in their earliest stages of the development of that culture, he recognized a kindred spirit there, you know? So it's really just it's the next evolution of Black cool, you could say, although, as you mentioned, it's become multiracial and multicultural. In the early days in the Bronx, it's important to remember that There were all kinds of kids involved, a lot of Puerto Rican, Dominican kids, dancing, break dancing, painting graffiti. You know, so hip hop is a lifestyle. It's not mm-hmm. just rap music, which is one aspect of it. The DJ and the MC are, you know, the components of rap music. But then you have, as I said, break dancing, graffiti. So there's multiple aspects to hip hop, and it's become the most powerful and popular form of entertainment in the world. That is,
I agree. I absolutely definitely agree. Yep, very very powerful medium. Right. Okay.
But it's important to remember, so for Kool Herc and all the way up to Nipsey Hussle, the music, although we talk about, you know, how dangerous it can be to be a successful rapper and how many have tragically met with violent, you know, ends, the music is a way out of those problems. It's not the cause of the problem, and it's not a social problem in itself, which I think a lot of cultural critics try to do. They try to blame the music, blame the messenger. And, you know, Nipsey Hussle loved hip hop. And from a little kid, when he was 7 years old, Criss Cross put up that song Jump. It was two boys from Atlanta had us.
Right. Yeah, it's crisscross, right?
Nipsey saw that, and he wanted to do that. Like, he was determined to be a rap star from the time he was a little kid. And, you know, long before any of the street life got into his way, hip-hop was really the guiding light and an economic opportunity. And that's what he was determined to do, is to leverage the power of hip-hop and the commercial opportunities to better himself, to better his community, to uplift his family and everyone that he cared about. So I want to make sure that that gets said, because very often the mass media labels hip hop as like something that causes problems, and it's exactly the opposite.
No, I mean, you know, you can talk about the lyrics sometimes and whatever, but you're right. When somebody listens to it, you know, they're transported, because that's what music does. It's something that moves you, that elevates your mood. And it's there for a purpose. And that's why people listen to it. And that's why we'll buy it. Because, you know, it elevates your mood, any kind of music, you know.
Expresses your feelings, which can be frustration, or it can be inspiration. It can be, you know, specific information. You know, there's records where Nipsey talks about specific police officers that harassed him in his neighborhood and describes them physically and drops their names subtly in the song. It's almost like encoded.
Yeah. We're still working on that. I think we've turned a corner on that, though, you know, with George Floyd, but it's been going on for years. You know, we've just turned a corner. But yeah, as a Black man, you can't just, you're always been harassed, you know? So, and it's great that Nipsey,
if you know that this one guy with a certain haircut and his name is this on his badge, if you see him, if he pulls you over and you heard about it in Nipsey's song, you know, you better be on your toes, you know? So it's just things like that. Hip hop is very powerful and subtle language that, you know, it permeates every aspect of life.
That's beautiful. All right. So as we wrap up, you know, tell our listeners about, you know, how they can get your book. Everybody knows you can get an Amazon. You also still have the digital vibe, because I went on it and your name is all over with all your videos. So tell us what that is. I mean, it started off as a magazine. What do you guys do now there at Vibe?
Well, Vibe, as we mentioned, was founded by Quincy Jones back in 1992. I joined the startup staff in 93. But that first year we just put out one issue. So I wrote an article in that issue, and Time Inc., which is obviously a major media corporation, was deciding whether they were going to back this publication or not. And after the first issue sold well, they said, oh yeah, Quincy had a good idea. We should do this. And so I ended up working at Vibe for 17 years. I was the only editor who started from the startup staff and stayed all the way until the very last day, when, you know, the magazine had to be shut down Quincy had moved on and the ownership had changed hands. And, you know, it's a long story, but the bank basically repossessed the investment. So,
okay.
But the website, the digital version of Vibe has gone on because it's a very important publication. I think Vibe became the definitive publication for hip hop culture in terms of excellent photography, excellent journalism. We had some of the most talented writers and photographers of this generation working at the magazine. And, you know, it has gone on because it needs to go on. You know, it still holds up a standard of excellence in terms of discussing all the aspects of hip hop culture, lifestyle, et cetera. So, you know, vibe.com is going strong. It's actually under new ownership and, you know, in the midst of a growth spurt right now. So Vibe is going strong. And when you mention about the book, I just want to add, you can go online and buy, and I hope people get their hands on a copy of The Marathon Don't Stop. But if you can, please support your local bookstores, because, you know, the pandemic has been really hard on them, and they are an important part of the whole culture. You know, people go on Google and look things up that they already know about. But when you go to a bookstore, you discover things you've never heard of, you know, and that is a completely different experience. And there's a social meeting place, and you can get a cup of coffee and, you know, listen to some cool music while you're browsing the shelves. So I want to really encourage people to support local bookstores and, you know, but by all means, even if you just go to the library and check out The Marathon Don't Stop, I hope that people read it. I believe that Nipsey Hussle's message is one that the world needs right now. As you mentioned, we've gone through the madness of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and, you know, Adam Toledo just the other day in Chicago. And, you know, the names, the list of names never stops. And I think it has to do with a lot of issues, as we mentioned. But, you know, one of those issues is self-empowerment, coming together, valuing each other's thoughts and lives and contributions, and also creating economic opportunities so people aren't in such pressurized situations, you know, and having businesses that are family-owned, that are Black-owned, that are owned by people of color, just people who are independent and open-minded. I think that is the key. And, you know, Nipsey Hussle, you know, we haven't even touched on all the technology stuff he was doing. He opened a STEM learning center in his neighborhood where he was encouraging people to learn science and technology and engineering so that they could get jobs in the tech industry and, you know, elevate and the jobs of tomorrow. Like, everyone's talking now about cryptocurrency and blockchain. Nipsey Hussle was on that way before.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that he talked about that years ago. Absolutely. Amazing. Well, he's obviously a brilliant, brilliant guy.
Yeah. And I would love to know that the movement that he started and the ideas that he has championed will be carried on. And I've already heard people starting book discussion groups to read The Marathon Don't Stop. I've heard people reaching out from every continent of the planet talking about how they're reading the book. Someone in Africa who was actually in Nairobi, Kenya, was saying, you know, I'm reading the book and I just want you to know that people in this city not only love Nipsey's music, but they are following his business ideas and starting their own businesses and directly identifying with him as an inspiration. So, I mean, his wave is worldwide. And, you know, I that's why I felt an obligation to write this book. It's very nice to be able to talk with you about it, because I love speaking with people who are still learning about him. And I feel like we're spreading the word, and it's very important. So thank you for this opportunity today, Myrna.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you so much for what you are doing for, you know, all the artists, you know, for Nipsey's name and Tupac and Notorious B.I.G. and what you do at Vibe. You know, you're uplifting these, you know, there's two ways that most of the young Black boys dream. They dream of becoming a rapper, or they dream of being in the NFL, or something, you know. So thank you for continuing that inspiration. You know that you know, it's not where you start out, but where you end up. And if you use the brain power that you have, you can find your niche and go on to do great things. I know your book is a New York Times bestselling author, so it's out there, it's visible, it's, you know, people are reading it. And I'm gonna do my part to help promote it. And thank you for saying that, you know, people purchasing the book is gonna help, you know, Black businesses and extend the culture. So
thank you. I appreciate that. And I would just add, as you said, you know, sports and music are often, you know, seen as a way to elevate yourself.
Yeah.
Nipsey started Vector 90, his shared workspace and STEM learning center, because he wanted ways to learn about technology when he was a kid. You know, he was building computers when he was in high school out of parts. And he told me when I interviewed him that if I had had access to a STEM learning center when I was a kid, my whole life trajectory might have been completely different. So, you know, there are more paths to success than sports and music, which are both very long shots, honestly, of all these.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying that's what the kids dream about. We know that it's a 1% chance.
Right. All the athletes and all the musicians, you know, a very small percent ever really see success. And even those who do sometimes tragically get caught up. Just last week, I think just yesterday, I believe, my sister is an educator in Chicago, Lisa Kenner, and two of her students who are both bound for very promising basketball careers and NCAA Division I schools were caught up in a drive-by shooting in Chicago, and they're okay, but they were both wounded, you know. And it's just, there has to be more solutions, there has to be more answers. And I think Nipsey Hussle was searching for those solutions, and that's why he's so important.
Yeah. Well, hey, the marathon continues, right? So I like that, because we all know that life is not a sprint, it's a marathon. And, you know, as like Black Lives Matter, it is a marathon. You know, it's started a long time ago, you know, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, you know, the Black Panther guy, I don't remember his name now. We're all,
all the way through.
But, you know, we're all running this marathon. So thank you so much for what you do. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Transform Your Mind to Transform Your Lives. You know, what you're doing is transforming our lives, our minds, that, you know, you can be an artist, but you can also be an inspiration. You can be a motivational person, and you can show the young people that are looking up to you that there's a way out of, you know, maybe being in a bad neighborhood in Los Angeles or Chicago or wherever. There's poverty and there's gangs and all these bad things, you know, there's a way out. You don't have to stay there.
You definitely do not. And it does, your title of your show is perfect, because is about transforming your mind. It's about, you know, thinking differently. And I think that is a perfect analogy for what Nipsey Hussle's whole mindset was. You know, he transformed his mind. He did not allow the obstacles in his path to define.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I love it. I love it. Well, thank you, Rob. I know you've got a hard stop. So thank you once again for coming on and sharing the life of times of Nipsey Hussle, and that the marathon doesn't stop. The marathon of what we want to do in this country, to take our place at the head of the table and not at the tail, and to encourage everybody to transform your mind, to transform your life. You know, my listeners know that they can get a transcript of our conversation on the show page, which is blog.myhopes.us. We'll also have links to Rob's book and also links to vibe.com. So thanks again, Rob. Thank you guys all for watching and tuning in. Blessings to everyone. And until next time, namaste.
Thank you, Myrna. God bless.